Everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started. We don't have a quorum, but we will continue through the agenda with items that don't require a quorum. Kathleen is not available to us today, so you're stuck with me. So we'll see how that goes. And thank you all for coming here. I also wanted to let you know that our member Winter is not here at the moment, and we send congratulations for being elected to City Council. And so that's actually a really good reason to lose a member. I think it's an awesome way to lose a member, personally. And wish him the best of luck. With that, we don't normally introduce.
No.
So we'll skip the approval of minutes. I do have a public comment card from Jerry Grace. So, and here comes, oh, we have a quorum now. Jerry, if you could just hold off a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
You do what you need to do.
And actually, Jerry, since you're public comment and since we can't act on your comment, I'll go ahead and take you now, and then we'll circle back to our number two item. So we'll take public comment now. Jerry, you're up.
You need to do. I get the picture.
Okay.
Thanks. I hear it a long, long time ago, and it's the first time back again, and then I hear a long time. Most of you guys don't know who I am. My name is Jerry Grace. I'm in West CC County, and I travel all over the place in a different part of town. I love going to the fair. I love learning about the different part of town, and I learn about the buses. I am very, very pleased NAPA and BALLAGO and other county, the other city, it will get a clipper card very soon, 215, 216. I have people that because I'm very pleased and I'm jumping up and down. Happy for that because I'm very pleased for MTC get it to them, get it together, and I happy that get theirs 215, 216 next year and the other 2 years. And they're a long way to get there. A lot of them will change a whole lot. The same way that bought AC Transit, APA, San Francisco Community, BART, and all of them is working very hard. They got into it on a clipper card. Very soon, I'm going to be happy for them, too. And I'm ready for that. And last thing I saw on there, the report, and I'll be back up here again next few minutes. And I saw something in there, and I'm very pleased for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. There's a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second? Vita seconds. Is there any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? And moving on. Subcommittee reports. Naomi? Can somebody?
Thank you. Okay. So the Equity Access Committee has actually met twice since our last meeting. We met a couple weeks ago, specifically about the cap and trade language funding issue. We had a special meeting, and we invited members of the Regional Mobility Management Group. And Rebecca Long was kind enough to take her break time. She was in Sacramento and be on the phone with us. So we provided our input on what we hoped the language could include so that the funding would not preclude some of our very important community-based mobility management transportation programs. And we will update you on that going forward. And then we had our regular meeting today, just before this meeting, and our primary topic was the proposed methodology for the 2015 TIP investment analysis. Now, this is something that this large committee has tasked the Equity Access Committee with taking a first pass on when this comes up. And we last did this a year ago. And it turns out that it's not substantially different as a process because it's basically at the behest of the state that this has to be done again this year. So the methodology that we are seeing and basically how it's being done and most of the analysis or the results, which we haven't seen yet because they have to do it, is expected to be roughly the same as what happened a year ago. Nevertheless, the committee had a couple of very serious concerns. First of all, that although this was listed as getting feedback from us on the methodology already went to the Programming Allocations Committee this morning. So we're not really sure what we're giving feedback on something that's already been essentially decided. The other main concern was that the data sources that are being used for this are the BATS, which is hasn't been done since 2000. And then the other one is the, do you remember, Randy? Is a transit-related survey, I believe, Bay Area. And that was 2007? 2006 and 7. And so these seem to be very out-of-date sources to the committee, even though we understand, you know, what this analysis is trying to do, which is, as we say, nothing substantially revolutionary at this point. But it did cause us a lot of concern, you know, for the future. So we've asked that we have an agenda item with the staff that is working on these surveys and studies and get an idea of when some of this data is going to be updated and can be incorporated. So we don't know that there's substantially anything to do with this pass or even that it needs to be done, but it definitely very much raised concerns for future methodologies and these analyses. Any follow-up from the rest of the committee on that? Okay. That's our report. Thank you.
And there's no questions from anybody on that. I will say that for those of you who are interested in how we come to our conclusions, attending the meeting where we do discuss the methodology is, the meeting's open to everybody. So you just get here an hour or so early and let Pam know you're coming. It will help you understand how we get to the point where we get to it. Moving on to item number 5, public engagement. This is a recap of the work that we've done, and we have Ellen and Carolyn who will be letting us know what the compilation of all of our work was, and I'd ask people to hold questions until they're done with their presentation.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Carolyn Clevenger with MTC's planning section. We're sort of swapping our order. Because I think most of the discussion will be leading out of what Ellen goes over. So I just wanted to provide to you today an update as we're, believe it or not, already starting to look to the next RTP SCS. We adopted, for those of you, RTP is Regional Transportation Plan, and SCS is the Sustainable Community Strategy. So as many of you probably recall, in July of 2013, we approved the region's first RTP SCS called Plan Bay Area. Per federal requirements, we have to update the RTP every 4 years. So we are already, as staff, starting to think about how we'll be approaching that next update to make sure that we can prepare and, you know, develop the material in a time. And since you talked about public engagement in detail at your last meeting, obviously public engagement is a very key part of the long-range plan every time we do that, and will be a big, you know, item that we'll be discussing with you over the next few years. So we wanted to provide this overview for you to think about as you're reviewing the material you talked about at your May meeting. Developing the first Plan Bay Area was a 3-year multi-layered process that involved literally hundreds of public meetings. You know, as you're looking at a 28-year planning horizon, which is what the plan looked at, many initiatives are long-range. We don't necessarily need to start from scratch every time you redo a long-range plan. Many of the policies, projects, programs carry over from one plan to the next. So as we look towards the 2017 update, Our approach at this point is to build off of what was done for the last plan and to really try to focus our efforts on updating material, providing things that we heard during final adoption were perhaps not developed as fully as people would have liked to have seen, and to look at what new initiatives we need to integrate into the plan. Some of the things that we are looking at that we already have sort of on our radar screen as things we want to incorporate more holistically are some of the efforts that many of our partner regional agencies are undertaking. We heard that a lot during the adoption of the plan, that we really needed to better encapsulate some of the work that the Air District was doing and that the Bay Conservation and Development Corporation, so BCDC, or sorry, Commission, BCDC is doing. Some of those items are related to sea level rise adaptation planning that is underway. MTC is working with BCDC as well as ABAG on some sea level rise adaptation planning work that we hope to bring in more wholly into the next plan. In addition, the Air District is working on how to advance infill development in healthy ways, what they call their healthy infill guidelines. So we are hoping to incorporate those more fully into the next plan. There's additional work going on in assessing the growth potential and priority development areas, which was a key piece of Plan Bay Area, really looking at how to focus growth. And then there's we also heard a lot of questions about economic development, prosperity, and how we better capture some of that in the next plan. So I think many of you are aware of the HUD grant that is underway right now, looking at economic prosperity, and there's also some work with the Bay Area Councils, their Economic Institute, looking at economic development. So we're hoping to pull both of those efforts in more fully into the next plan. In addition, MTC is leading two key studies that will feed into the plan. We are developing a regional goods movement plan, which is one of the things that a lot of people requested when we adopted the last plan. So that is about 18-month process that we've been initiating these last few months, and we'll be briefing this committee as the work develops. We're also in the process of doing some transit planning work, working with the Coro transit operators. So we are doing two studies, one looking at sort of the San Francisco, Coro San Francisco area and the Transbay corridor, and how we really provide the capacity for the current and future growth within that area. There's obviously a lot of jobs growth, a lot of housing growth projected in those areas, and the transit systems are already, you know, feeling the crunch in terms of crowding. So how do we better serve that key area of the region that's forecast to take a lot of growth? And then also in the South Bay, looking at transit connectivity, particularly trying to solve some of those first and last mile problems, how you get people to the transit systems that are down there. So those are some of the initiatives that we're working on as staff that we're hoping will help feed into the next plan and be sort of some of the new material we're looking at. This fall, we'll be initiating the development of the public participation plan, which Ellen and her staff will be leading. And that is essentially developing the plan for engagement and outreach for the next RTPSCS. So a lot of your discussion in May and what you continue to talk about today will help inform that work. Some of the things that we know we'll be doing as part of the outreach for the next plan are obviously conducting a number of public meetings throughout the region. We'll, as always, continue to offer presentations to groups that request them. We are going to be continuing to work with community-based organizations to be able to engage members at a very local level, particularly focused on trying to reach low-income communities and communities of color. And we will be developing and trying to continue to kind of advance some of our online forums. That's something we've been trying to understand how to better engage for the last plan, and hopefully we'll learn some lessons going into this next RTP. We'll be briefing the joint MTC Planning and ABAG Administration Committee in July, just on the approach of really doing a limited and focused update to the next plan. And Ellen will also be looking at ways to incorporate many of the ideas you talked about in May into some of the work coming up this fall in terms of the public participation plan. So I think that's sort of the high-level approach we're taking leading into the next plan. And then Ellen's going to go over a lot of the discussion and feedback she heard from you at your May meeting.
Thanks, Carolyn. There will be some baseline got-to-do outreach for the next plan, like public meetings and stuff, but we will really take into consideration the ideas that you offered at the last meeting, and I just wanted to review them now and maybe highlight a couple that I think are especially applicable to the next plan update. And then also just get input from you to make sure we accurately captured your ideas and see if we missed anything or need to revise anything. So as Carolyn mentioned, we will be updating the MTC's public participation plan, anticipating the next. It's funny, we have to do a plan for a plan, but but that's what we do. The public participation plan kind of lays out the structure for the next plan, and it is important for people to get a sense of where they can, where the opportunities for comment and influence will be. So, you know, I don't mean to make light of it, but it is very, it's kind of, sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around working on a plan about a plan. But anyway, so we sorted your suggestions from the brainstorming session, which, by the way, I really enjoyed participating in, and I think the council should consider doing more of those when you're just trying to come up with ideas and brainstorm. It was really nice, and it's nice to get to know people. I think you got to know each other, and I got a chance to learn more about some of you. But we sorted the comments into, you know, comments about messaging, comments about stakeholders and ways to engage different groups, and then the third category is the particular strategies or techniques. So a couple just really jumped to mind about, you know, our approach to the next plan. So I was going to briefly touch on some of those. The very first one, to connect regional planning to local plans, that's something that I think we learned the hard way in the last plan process, that you know, it really helps if people can see how the policies in our plan actually are bolstering something that the local elected officials have, or voters have expressed support for in their community. And so we'll be really working in our messaging to make that point and show examples, show specifics in that regard. And then also show success stories, too, because I think a lot of this stuff is very abstract in people's minds. So when you're talking about a priority development area, you know, we should probably highlight a couple and maybe go talk to people who live there, and or talk to people who live in the neighborhoods adjacent to them, and just see how it's going and report on that. You also suggested messaging to, you know, not just to adults, but think of, do it multi-generationally and do outreach to kids. And then I also take to heart the message or your comment about needing to respond quickly to misinformation as it's out there. Sometimes I think just public agencies have a hard time being nimble in that regard, but we will, I think we're going to really prioritize that and be really quick about responding to questions and comments, especially if they're just not true. Stakeholders, you know, just following along on the list here, elected officials will remain a key stakeholder group, and we will be doing a lot of outreach to them, or rather probably our boards will be doing a lot of outreach to their peers. And we'll support them in that effort. And then also at the staff level, our planning staff will be dealing with city and county government planning staff and congestion management agencies, transit agencies, and the like. I'm looking at the number 8 under stakeholders about piggybacking onto smaller community group meetings. I think somewhere else there's a suggestion for a speakers bureau, and those kind of go together, but I think we want to do more of that instead of having as so many just MTC meetings, you know, getting on the agenda of other organizations at their request, or maybe some will put the request in. I think that's a great idea. Moving on to the last page about potential strategies, I already touched on the Speakers Bureau, but like 2, 3, and 4 there really go well together. Using you to help publicize some of the milestones or comment opportunities, I think we will try to produce, you know, push out an email that you guys can turn around easily. You know, you can just lift the language and send it out to organizations that you're affiliated with and encourage them to weigh in online or attend meetings and so forth. I think that's a great idea. And then number four takes it a step further, not just our advisors, but we could go so far as to recruit ambassadors to do that kind of work for us and get people who are willing to help us spread the word about the plan, the process, and opportunities to influence it. There's a lot of good comments about social media, web, online engagement, apps, texting campaigns. There's a lot of innovative stuff we could do in that regard. Number 12, I like, you know, to focus your outreach in places where people congregate. You guys had some great ideas about, you know, stuff I didn't know about bike parties, for example, or I know about all the fun runs and stuff, but you know, it was great to hear your ideas in that vein. So, just I'll end and then welcome your thoughts and comments. This outreach will be kind of on the scale of the plan itself, though. It'll be tailored. It won't be like last time was a big deal because it was the first ever RTP / sustainable community strategy. So it was really more of a blank slate. This time we're not going to be probably asking such broad questions and so forth, and we'll try to focus it so that it matches the plan itself and what is in play for change and so forth. So with that, welcome any comments or questions.
Before we take comments from the committee, we do have one public speaker card. Jerry?
Number 6.
Oh, it's on number 6? Okay, sorry. I was just hoping that you had comments. So, I'll take it from the committee. Well, Rich.
Yeah, I was very happy with the whole process. I thought it brought a lot of energy to the group. And I agree with you. I think it brought people closer together because this is still relatively a new group. Mm-hmm. But I was pleased to hear that it seems that there was some feeling of a good idea about the idea of engaging people who are like-minded with MTC and a speakers bureau and reaching out to other groups, because there are so many groups that are struggling to get members that love to have speakers. And it's an opportunity to bring people into their organizations. And it's really an opportunity to get our message out to some of the other community leaders that may be of help to us.
Sandy?
I just kind of wanted to follow up on your comment about the process of the workshop. I actually think having more opportunities like that, not just for us, but I attended the workshop on the CMA guidelines last week, I'm losing track of time now. But I think that was a really great process. I think it helped neutralize what could be really, you know, contentious conversations, and allowed for relationship building and just brainstorming, sharing ideas, and a kind of politically neutral process. And just in general, just observing that workshop last week, I thought it went really well, and the feedback I've heard from a lot of people is they really enjoyed it and thought it was a real step forward for MTC. So I think looking for further opportunities to do that whenever it would, you know, lend itself with the update process, I think would be good.
Your committee members. Jared.
Yes, Ellen. What the public engagement? Do you have a date or a window yet on that
on
part
the,
of it?
The PPP, as we call it, because we can't resist acronyms. We want it adopted before we begin we formally launch the next plan process. So we'll probably start putting that together. There's a lot of requirements for comment, you know, lengthy comment periods and so forth, written into federal planning regulations. So it'll be a, you know, 3 or 4 month process, and we'll probably we're already having conversations like the ones we're having with you, and then we'll be releasing a draft sometime in the fall and taking comments on it and probably adopting it in early spring.
Thank you.
Any other comments? I do have one comment that if we are going to establish sort of an on-the-road speakers bureau, that we kind of combine that with the idea of what it means to that local community, because I think that the message that you give to Berkeley is going to be a completely different message than you give to somebody in Sonoma or San Jose. So just some generic guidelines to make sure that you have a tie back to that actual community and how this process is supporting that. And I agree totally with Rich that as somebody who tries to engage the community, it's sometimes difficult to find people with knowledge to come in and actually speak on topics that people are interested in. So thank you. And if there's nothing else from the committee, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, since we're on a fast track here, our next item is the Transit Capital Priorities Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program, and I got that all out in one breath. Shruti, I will leave this in your hands, and again, please save any questions or comments until after the presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Shruti Hari, and I manage the Transit Capital Priorities Program, which governs the programming of approximately $390 million in FTA formula funds annually and $150 million in STP CMAC funds annually. So these are the various aspects of the Transit Capital Priorities or the TCP program that I'll be walking you through today. In a nutshell, this presentation will give you a background on the TCP program, the various fund sources, the policies that govern the programming of these funds, as well as some proposed revisions to the TCP policy for the FY15 and FY16 round of the TCP program. This month, we're bringing this resolution 4140, which is the updated TCP policy resolution, to the Commission for approval. And the proposed revisions are summarized in attachment 1 in your packet along with this item. And I'll be giving you an understanding of these in later slides as well. I would also like to give you a recap on the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program and how it impacts the TCP policy. Now, since our transit capital needs exceed our funding levels, we need to have a policy in place to determine how to fund the highest priorities, given that everything cannot be funded. And the TCP process and criteria is MTC's policy to determine which projects will be funded and acts as a guideline for distributing the FTA formula funds among the several stakeholders that we have. Now, the policy is developed in collaboration with partnership, mainly the Transit Finance Working Group. Now, let's take a look at the various funding sources that flow into the TCP program. It's mainly the FTA formula funds and the AB664 funds. The AB664 are bridge toll revenues that MTC uses to match the TCP funds, and these amount to close to $11 million annually. And the FTA formula funds are made up of the Section 5307 urbanized area formula, the Section 5337 state of good repair, and the Section 5339 bus and bus facilities formula program. And all of these programs combined amount to $390 million annually. Now let's talk about the flow of funds. For FY13 and 14, funds were authorized by Congress under MAP 21, and we are expecting Congress to enact new authorizing legislation for FY15 and FY16. And after authorization, FTA apportions the funds to the urbanized areas by statutory formulae, and the designated recipient varies by program. It's either usually MTC or Caltrans, but in all cases, it's MTC that programs these funds to the various transit operator projects. Now let's take a look at how the funds are actually apportioned. The MTC region has 12 urbanized areas, 5 large and 7 small. And the FTA apportionments for the large urbanized areas are based on transit service and population factors, whereas they are, for the smaller urbanized areas, they are based on population factors only. And there's 22 transit operators in the Bay Area region that are currently designated to receive FTA funds. This slide gives you an understanding of what projects are eligible under the various FTA fund sources, and almost any kind of capital project is eligible under Section 5307, and in certain circumstances, operating assistance is eligible as well. Section 5337 replaces the old 5309 fixed guideway program and is similar to 5307 in all respects, except that it is limited to fixed guideway systems only. Section 5339 replaces the old 5309 bus and bus facilities discretionary program and is mainly for the replacement of or expansion of buses or bus facilities. This slide gives you an overview of the amount of funds programmed under the three FTA programs in 1 year. So after the 10% FTA set aside, which in this case amounts to 20 million, and the 3 million of lifeline set aside are taken off the top, the rest of the FTA formula funds are programmed by project score. So even though these are different funding programs, under the TCP, all of these funds are programmed as a package, and a project could receive funding from multiple programs. Just to give you an understanding of the set-asides that we just talked about, starting with the ADA operating set-aside, FTA allows up to 10% of apportionments in each urbanized area to be used for ADA-required paratransit operating costs. And so MTC takes 10% of the top in each urbanized area and distributes to the operators for their required paratransit operating costs. The lifeline set-aside is more recent under the TCP policy and was added after the elimination of the JARC program under MAP 21, and so funds equivalent to the JARC formula apportionments, which amount to 3 million per year, are to be set aside, will be set aside for the Lifeline program for the upcoming FY15 and FY16 TCP program round. So after deducting these set asides, the remaining FTA formula funds are programmed by TCP project score in the following score order shown here. With the highest score given to revenue vehicle replacements. And we always try to fund the score 16 projects. And whether we are able to program funds to projects below score 16 depends on the urbanized area and the competition of the various projects within the urbanized area. Now, we have limits in place to prevent any single project or operator from monopolizing the regional funds and to ensure priority for vehicle replacement. These are called project caps. So we have some fixed guideway project caps where operator caps range from 1.4 million to 45 million based on the operator's share of projected fixed guideway needs in the plan bay area. We have some other caps like 30 million for rail vehicle procurements, 20 million for bus procurements, and 5 million for other non-fixed guideway equipment replacement. So this shows you the programming process after the policy in place. Like I mentioned, the policy will be in front of the commission this month. So after the policy is adopted, MTC plans to send out the call for projects for the TCP program. And operators would then request funding for priority projects in response to the call for projects that we send out. And based on that, we would develop the preliminary program. Now, this would be based on the projected apportionments that we have by urbanized area. And so once we have the preliminary program in place, we incorporate it into the TIP, but then we end up amending it later after the final apportionments are released by FTA, and that is usually through commission approval. Now, in November of last year, we had brought to the Policy Advisory Council a proposed new program, the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program, which would target federal, state, and regional funds to high-priority transit capital projects that would improve the capacity and state of good repair of transit services in the urban core of the region. And this program includes an investment package of over $7 billion, out of which $3.3 billion is in TCP funding over the next 16 years. The program itself focuses on three largest transit operators, the SFMTA, BART, and AC Transit, and it accelerates and solidifies funding for fleet replacement projects and identifies new funding for key replacement projects. It complements major new funding commitments in 2012 to the Silicon Valley BART extension Caltrain improvements, as well as leverages regional discretionary funds and local contributions, including the proposed cap and trade revenue. Now, since a major chunk of this program is made up of TCP funds, MTC staff will be working closely with the Core Capacity Challenge Grant project sponsors to determine their project schedules and cash flow needs, the timing of their local revenues, and size and timing of any required financing that we need to do for this program. And the FY 15 and 16 would be the first phase of implementing the Core Capacity Challenge Grant program. And so various sections of the policy, of the TCP policy, have been updated to ensure consistency with this program. Now, moving on to the revisions that we are proposing as part of the policy update for the FY 15 and FY 16 round. Like I mentioned, most of the current policies are being extended to the FY 15 and FY 16 round, except in the following areas. One is, as I mentioned, we made the policy, the TCP policy, consistent with the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program. As part of the policy update, we are updating our bus van price list based on a survey of the operators and how much they paid for the various bus procurements. We've also updated a formula to distribute the 10% ADA operating set aside. It used to be based on revenue generation. Now the proposed new formula will be based on demand response operating expenses, demand response ridership, and overall ridership with the weights that are shown here. As part of the policy update, we are also updating the regional fixed guideway total and the individual operator caps and clarifying areas of other project caps. We are revising our vehicle replacement policy as well to allow mileage in addition to useful life in years, in order to acknowledge that higher mileage may warrant earlier replacement. And then a new FTA circular allows MTC to comply with our one-person security policy requirement at an urbanized area level rather than at an operator level. And as we continue to assess opportunities for joint procurements and coordinated operations, we added policy elements that would serve as an incentive for the operators for joint procurements. Now, related to the changes being proposed, a couple of issues that I would like to highlight. One is related to the Federal Transportation Reauthorization Bill. Congress has not yet enacted a new Surface Transportation Authorization Bill to take the place of MAP 21. MAP 21 expires September 30th of this year, so the amount of funding for the FY 15 and the FY 16 TCP program round is currently unknown. And both Plan Bay Area and the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program had assumed an average of 3% increase from the FY14 funding levels. But the preliminary indications are not looking great because the Senate version includes inflation increases of less than 2%, whereas the House version of the bill looks like it's going to maintain the FY14 funding level. And that would, of course, be an issue for us because it would, make worse the challenge of bringing the region's transit into a state of good repair. The other issue is that there are huge amounts of undisbursed grant dollars throughout the region. And as we developed the FY 15 and 16 program, we would request substantial justification for unexpected grant amounts before programming additional funds for the same project. And I'd like to conclude this presentation by giving you an idea of the TCP program development. So once the policy is adopted by the Commission this month, we are planning to send out the call for projects right after and develop the draft program from the end of this month through October, with the goal of taking the final program and the TIP amendment to the Commission for approval in December. And that concludes my presentation. This was an informational item. If you have any questions on the TCP program or in the policy updates that I talked about, you can check with me now or you can email or call me anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a speaker card. Jerry? Rich, I'll take you first. Anybody else? Linda?
Wow! That is very good information. Thank you for that information. That was very heavy. I really didn't know that would happen, and now. Oh boy. I'm trying to think when I'm going to point it out, but to me, that's a lot of good information of 215, 216. And and I know they say on the computer, they say they will bring it to the, I think I said this right, but I did down wrong. Is it in the springtime or the fall season they have the cripple car? Did I say that right?
I think so. Which one are you talking about again?
If this information, what I think it is, 15 to 16, this isn't talking about the Clippercon or the something a little bit different.
That's different.
Oh, that is different.
This is operating not necessarily the Clipper card. Is that what you're asking?
That's what I thought in my mind first, and I saw this report, and I thought it in my mind. But I didn't know what that, I don't see this. I mean, not really clear in my mind, but I was really surprised what I'm seeing, and I don't understand all this. But this is really surprised me. That's a good, but not a good information.
Thank you.
And I have to think about it and see what I'm trying to point out. You, other staff, what other people say, and then I'm think about what I wanted to point out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can always direct questions to staff at a later time. Rich?
This is a fairly simple question. When you were talking about the ADA set-asides, the 10%, you were talking about revisiting it as under a demand response formula. Is that simply counting heads to see what the overall ridership is and judging whether to disperse funds or not?
It's based on three factors, so let me get to that slide.
I was just curious, is the term demand response?
So demand response is mainly paratransit services that these operators are providing. So we are so part of it would be the operating expenses of a particular operators, how much they're spending towards demand response operating expenses. That's at 40%. How much is the demand response or paratransit ridership? That is how.
So that is part of it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then the overall ridership is like a little bit as well.
For the outlying areas, and the more rural areas, for instance, Sonoma, Napa, San Mateo County, which has a lot of urbanized area, but the bulk and share of the county is rural. Does that consider the miles that might have to be driven as well to get these numbers?
No, we're not considering miles. I think initially we had proposed that, but because of the same concern that you bring up, we had decided to take ridership into account as against the miles.
It seems to me the more miles you have to drive, maybe the fewer people you pick up.
That's true, yeah.
And the larger costs you generate.
Exactly. So we're trying to balance it out by like keeping in, taking into account the expenses, the ridership, and as well as the overall ridership.
Okay. Hopefully in the future we can consider also the amount of difficulty in collecting people from various locations that are widespread.
I'll take that into account.
Could I just add to the answer to that question? I'm Glenn Tepke. I also work on the Transit Capital Priorities Program. The thing to keep in mind is that TCP is a program. The FTA funds are specifically for services in urbanized areas. So the example like Sonoma County, where much of the county is outside of urbanized areas, transit services in the rural parts of the county would be funded with a separate FTA funding program. There's a specific program, the 5311 Rural Program, which supports services outside of urbanized areas.
Thank you for that clarification. I have Linda next.
Okay. Thank you. to help me understand this better, can I give you an example? Okay. In November, Measure BB includes BART to Livermore, which is going to pass this time. How is this going to fit into this?
This is Alex Bockelman with MTC. I would just note, just to clarify for the committee again, this money is really to support transit capital replacement and sort of state of good repair projects. So I guess related to your question, this money would really help to support the existing BART network to make sure that the vehicles can get replaced, the track work is done. Eventually, the BART to Livermore extension is built. This funding, right? If it passes and it's built, this funding would then help to support state of good repair for that project. So this is really about replacing buses, replacing rail cars, doing track work for rail, replacing ferries. So it's actually not it's not funding expansion projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Richard, then Will. And then Mike will take you.
Okay. On the slide that says urbanized area apportionments, and says the large urbanized areas is based on transit service and population factors, and then small urbanized areas just based on population factors. So I'm wondering, with the large urbanized areas have that extra thing with transit service, how much of a disadvantage is this putting the small urbanized areas versus large urbanized areas in when they're doing their requests for proposals or
whatever.
Glenn Tepke again. So the formula for dividing up these funds is kind of specified in the statute in Map 21, and so I'm trying to remember the actual percentages, but. Approximately 90% of the funds are directed to large urbanized areas, and then the remaining funds are for small urbanized areas. Then within each of those two pots, then they have their formulas again with large urbanized areas based on both the amount of transit service provided and population, and in the small urbanized areas it's just population. But it's not that small urbanized areas are not competing mm-hmm. against large urbanized areas for their share of funds, because they're, again, it's divided into two separate pots kind of at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. And the small urbanized areas, do they act individually, or would they have better weight if they, you know, act together as far as the ones in the Bay Area?
We're required to program the funds that we receive in each urbanized area for projects within the urbanized area. So we don't really have the opportunity to move money from one urbanized area to another, or to kind of have pooled projects that would span urbanized areas. We do have some operators that operate in more than one urbanized area. For example, BART operates in three different large urbanized areas, and so we can fund their projects with funds from any of those three urbanized areas. But for the small urbanized areas, in most of those cases, there's just one transit operator in the small urbanized area, and so again, they just basically work with the funds that they get in their urbanized area. There's not really opportunities for sharing or partnering, at least not in this program.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Will?
Yeah, my question is, with Map 21 and eliminating the job access reverse commute program, and that formulary apportionment, is that going to be added to Lifeline project allotment? That's, in other words, Lifeline's going to get an additional approximately $3 million. Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure.
Is that in addition to, or is it just simply calling an apple an orange?
It's just replacement, because Map 21 eliminated the JARC program. We're just setting aside 3% of 5307 funds.
I'm not sure what you've got going on over there.
Thank you.
Would you repeat that again, because it was all static?
So since MAP 21 eliminated the JARC program, we were trying to redirect some of our 5307 funds to the JARC program, to the Lifeline program, to substitute for the loss of the JARC program, basically.
Okay, so it is a substitute. It's not in addition to. Will, did you have a follow-up on that?
Well, yes, because it says here it's a set-aside in the Lifeline program. So that means it's earmarked?
It's a set-aside within the TCP program. And so essentially those funds are transferred from TCP program to the Lifeline program and then programmed for Lifeline projects according to the Lifeline policy.
So we take it off the top first.
Right. But an additional question to that is, on the Lifeline program, will it include a job access reverse commute project?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure it doesn't get cut.
Okay. Thanks, Will. Mike?
Yes. I think, first of all, you've done a great job here, but I'm looking at the bigger picture, and I know that things are prioritized here, and I also know that all the funding is not in place and we're underfunded to begin with. What is the long-term outlook to get the monies needed to do this? I mean, if we don't have the monies to do this, you're almost spinning your wheels here. And this is not a criticism of what you're doing, and it's not a sandbag question, but what feedback do you have from higher up in MTC on how we're going to make this work? Are we going to have a sales tax? Are we going to have more car registration funds? Where is it coming from?
Well, it's certainly true that we could use more FTA funds. Of course, we are always advocating, and each time an authorization bill comes up, we're advocating to maximize the funding for these FTA programs. We're only able to cover a portion of the need for capital replacement and rehab with these funds. But given that, at least in the near term, it doesn't look like we're going to get large increases in those programs. We'll probably just get either level funding or small inflation increases, at least in the near term. We are looking at opportunities for other funding sources to supplement this, and the best example is the core capacity program that Shruti described, in which so that's a $7.5 billion package of funding for a set of projects, and $3.3 billion of that total is coming from the TCP program, but we did bring in a variety of other funding sources, such as the anticipated revenues from the cap and trade program on GHG emissions from the state to basically supplement the federal funds and to be able to cover more of those needs.
Okay, I was wondering, whose decision would it be, for example, to get a quarter-cent sales tax increase? Marin County and Sonoma County under SMART did a quarter-cent sales tax, and while they got caught shorthanded because of the downturn in the economy originally in 2008, 2009, their revenues are picking up, and they're going to be able to finish their project here in a few years. It's underway right now. Why not a quarter-cent sales tax? Why not somebody in your capacity, not so much me, who is a very small part of this, say that? In other words, we've got this plan. In order to make it work, in order to fund it, we've got to do a quarter-cent sales tax here in the Bay Area. Yes or no? I mean, something. I mean, whether it be increase in motor vehicle fees, which makes sense to get people to go to transit, or something else. I mean, have you gone to whoever you need to go to say, we're underfunded, we're not sure how much money we're going to get, we have a plan, we have it prioritized, how are we going to make it work financially?
Alex is looking like she wants to answer that one.
Yes, I think it's a really good question, and actually it is a question that was taken up at a commission workshop in the last few months to sort of just have that broad discussion with our commissioners, and it might be good, I think, to have Randy Rentschler was the one that led that discussion. It might be good to have him back here to cover it? I mean, just as a quick response, obviously, you know, you have to have authority usually under state law to pursue some of these funding initiatives. MTC, I think, currently really only has authority to pursue up to a 10-cent per gallon regional gas tax. And I think in the past when we have pulled on that, it has looked to be not very supported. But I think it would be good if this group is interested to have Randy Rentschler give a more comprehensive report on this.
Thank you. Rich had another question.
I'm trying to clarify my mind. Over the years, you learn so many things, and sometimes they kind of crash against each other. The 5310 money that we get for capital, how does that play into the ADA piece of this?
5310, that's the elderly and disabled program. That's a separate program from TCP.
And it's for capital, like buses and...
Capital, yeah. But it was one of the programs that was substantially modified by MAP 21. So there used to be a 5310 elderly and disabled program, mm-hmm. and then a separate program, 5317, the New Freedom Program, mm-hmm. which was for projects and services for people with disabilities, kind of above and beyond ADA requirements. Mm-hmm. Those two programs were combined by MAP 21. The state is by default the administrator of those programs. So Caltrans is the administrator of the new combined 5310 program. However, we've worked out an agreement with Caltrans where MTC will be doing the project selection for 5310 funded projects in the Bay Area, and that's a program we're just starting to work on. That is an important program, but it is separate from the TCP.
And it is above and beyond 507 and the other
5307. Correct.
So it adds extra money. Right. We're trying process. To put all these together to see because you study them between meetings, yeah. and sometimes over a large period of time, and it's always interesting to see how they fit together. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark, did you have a question? Go ahead.
On slide 17, you mentioned increased scrutiny, and I wanted to make sure, or at least ask the question, are we still advocating that these agencies and go out and seek out grants for their projects?
Well, at a minimum, the federal... The FTA grants that are FTA awards, so after we develop our program of projects and then amend it into the TIP, as Shruti described, then the transit operators submit a grant application directly to FTA. FTA awards the funds. Those grant applications require a minimum of 20% local match for a capital project, and if the project is operating assistance, it's a 50% match requirement. So at a minimum, the operators are putting that much local funds into these projects, and sometimes if the project is, you know, costly and we didn't have sufficient federal funds to cover that normal 80% federal share, the operator will provide more than the minimum match in order to fully fund the project. And then specifically on that core capacity program, that $7.5 billion package, one of the provisions of that was that the operators participating in that had to provide 30% match in order to qualify for those funding sources. So yes, the operators and their local agencies are participating in this. It's not all federal.
Thank you. And I had a comment or two and questions. I'm kind of concerned about the demand response ridership and overall ridership methodology, because even though you don't have a large community and a small community, the urban and non-urban areas competing with each other, 1% ridership in one small area may have a larger population number than 1% in another area. And so I guess what I want to make sure we're not doing is just counting heads, but counting the impact that could possibly have. Because when you're just counting the people, you're not necessarily counting the impact that happens. I know that's not real clear, but it just doesn't feel balanced to me. My main questions, though, are centered around the core capacity challenge grant, because I don't see any way of us tracking the larger providers and what their capacity is and what their ability is to maintain their fleet. So what we're doing is we're saying, well, these are the largest providers and they need fleet repair, and we're giving them the money for their fleet repair. And I noticed the VTA is not on here at all, and VTA does a much better job financially of maintaining their fleet. So for us down in VTA land, it always feels like there's a disincentive for us because, well, those people up in the northern areas have more fleet, but we're actually serving a larger area. So I'm kind of wondering how VTA got left out, and because there's a discrepancy between what I'm hearing about the fleet capacity for BART in this, because you're telling Linda that part of this is to make sure that when BART comes there that we have a prepared fleet for it, but at the same time that's kind of like the set aside for the VTA area is to complement the, and that was what we were told at another meeting, was, well, basically you're going to get BART trains, we're buying those for you guys, that's kind of your cut of this pie here. So it seems to me it's a mixed message that's going out. So there's two issues to that. Is the BART, the South area, is that our kind of cut of the pie? But more importantly, how do we actually monitor each agency to see how effective they are at maintaining their fleets? Anybody?
Okay. Well, I wanted to start with the first question, and then we'll go to the second question. So I think one thing that I'm not sure was clear when we made the presentation on the changes to the ADA set-aside formula was that there was a formula that was in place for many years that actually didn't have any real relationship to ADA. It was actually based on the revenue generations that are in sort of FTA formulas. And those tend to, and again, this is sort of the federal rules and sort of how the money gets to us, those really... They tend to give some preference to fixed guideway operators, I would say, so rail and ferry operators. So in the past, the formula was sort of just based on those revenue generations, and that's how the money was being split among the operators. So what we're proposing here, we think, does a much better job of aligning the amount that the operators are getting to their real needs. And so I take the point that maybe it's not perfect still, but it really is relating it to the ADA operating expenses, the ADA ridership, with a little bit in there still for just general ridership. But we think that that is a much better alignment, and it tends to, I think, provide a little bit more money to the bus operators generally throughout the region who tend to have higher paratransit expenses than our previous formula did, just in general. So I just wanted to make sure that sort of was clear. Okay. It may not still be the perfect formula. I think it's always hard to find the perfect formula, but I think most of the operators thought that this was much more sort of aligning the purpose of the monies, which is to support ADA, with sort of a formula that would relate to those expenses.
Thank you.
So that's a little bit more background on the first question. I think on the second question, I'll probably let Glenn jump in if I don't catch all the, and Trudy, I probably won't catch all your questions, but I think one thing I did want to note is that we were focusing in on some of the operators that had the largest shortfalls in our plan. We were also trying to focus on some, the operators that had some near-term needs in particular, and I think we talked about this, BART was trying to award their fleet replacement project at the time. So it was focused on that. But I think really important to your question about Santa Clara is that the bulk of the funding in the package was really FTA formula funds. But it back to the map that shows the urbanized area, it didn't include any of the urbanized area money from San Jose and Gilroy Morgan Hill. That money is still available to support VTA and their fleet replacements, their rail projects. So all of that money is, you know, was not assumed as part of this revenue package at all. I think that some of the other funding sources that were in there, you know, a lot of the money was coming from the operators themselves. There was some bridge tolls that really related more to, you know, the congestion of the bridge corridors really were more related to these three operators. So without kind of going through the whole structure again, I think that we weren't trying to leave other operators out. I mean, we definitely have money still preserved to support them. It was trying to address where a large amount of the shortfall was identified in the plan, where we had some near-term needs. And again, we were putting the urbanized area FTA funds was a large part of the funding, but we weren't taking it from some of these, we weren't taking it from San Jose and many of the other urbanized areas that have other operators. Those monies were not part of the funding plan.
That's kind of not the question I was trying to ask, and I realize I wasn't really clear. But my question is, do we have a way of rating the efficiency with which operators maintain their fleets? Because I don't know, Pam can tell you how many years I've been sitting in these councils, but there hasn't been a year when I haven't heard that there's shortfalls with Muni and there's shortfalls with AC. So I'm trying to figure out how we as a region address the fact that we have struggling operators year after year after year who are consistently behind. And how do we actually get them to an efficiency rating where it evens out, where we're not saying, oh, my goodness, that we have to do this for them, rather than having an even playing field? So is there a way of doing that?
That's a good question. I think that we're trying to tackle that in a few different ways. I mean, one thing that we do fund for all the operators are short-range transit plans to at least make sure that we're looking at what are the needs across the region. But the other thing we're trying to do as part of that is we have a transit capital inventory, but which basically looks at all the assets in the region, and we've tried to standardize, you know, all the information from all the operators that are in there. But what we're trying to add into it, but it's hard, and nationally it's not done very well, is to really put within that kind of what is the condition of these assets, and then you could start to see maybe across the region better this question that you're talking about of like who's doing a good job or a bad job. I mean, it also is that some of the operators are more, you know, they have a newer system, and so that's why they're not seeing some of the shortfalls as soon, at least on the, you know, especially on the rail side. With the buses, we really try to replace those every 12 years for all the operators across the region to try to keep that sort of in harmony across the region. But I think on the rail side, when you have much older operators, you definitely tend to have these larger costs for state of good repair. And I think with, anyways, maybe Glenn can add on to that since he's been working on this question.
Well, I was just going to add a couple things to go back to your question about the ADA set aside, the formula for that. You know, as Alex said, it's not a perfect formula. It's a lot better than the formula we had before. But one of the challenges when you're trying to design a formula for distributing funds among operators, you need to have a data source for the numbers that feed into your formula that everyone agrees is a solid, reliable data source. And so all the transit operators are required to report their paratransit ridership and their paratransit operating costs to a FTA. They have a thing called the National Transit Database. And so those are kind of audited numbers. Everyone agrees that they're valid. And so yes, it might be more ideal to have a formula that's based on the, you know, effectiveness of their paratransit services, but we don't have a good source of data that to base a formula on. So, to some degree, you're kind of limited to, you know, the information sources you have. And then I also just wanted to clarify on the BART to Livermore and you know the funding for the cars there. So, as Alex said, with any kind of fleet expansion project, the TCP program typically does not fund the expansion projects, so we find other funding sources for those. But once the vehicles are in place as part of an expansion project, then they become eligible for when they're due for replacement in the future, then they would be eligible for funding through TCP. So if BART to Livermore is built, the additional cars required for that project would be funded from some other source, but then once they're in place, then in the future, you know, 25 years in the future, when those cars are in need of replacement, then the TCP program would kind of take responsibility for funding their replacement. Similarly with BART into Santa Clara County, those additional cars required for that project are part of the expansion project costs, but once they're in place, then their future replacements would be funded through TCP. So that's true, you know, across the region.
So the cars that are coming to me in San Jose, they'll be worn out, and then they'll qualify for a different pot of money so that we can get Linda her cars through the pot that I got my money. I'm kind of figuring out how this all flows around
right
here. But
so,
okay.
So basically, the point is that expansion projects, to some degree, they may be competing among each other for funding, but they're not competing with replacement and rehab projects for funding. Those are two separate streams.
Thank you. Will, did you have another question?
Yeah, I had a question. Now, what happens to transit operators that have historic fleets? They can't go out and buy replacement parts, and they have to be made in-house. Is there funding for that?
Yeah, we set aside funds for rehabilitation. So basically, it would not be replacement, but basically rehabilitation of these historic streetcars. So we do set aside funds for that.
Okay, under what program is that?
Under the 5307
program. Right. For example, San Francisco's historic streetcars on the F line and the cable cars, they're sort of by definition irreplaceable, but they do need frequent rehabilitation, and so
right,
we fund that through TCP in lieu of replacing them.
Thank you. I would like in the future to have a better understanding of what the fleet, the conditions of the fleets are, because if we're expending a lot of money replacing old fleets, there's a catch-up period somewhere along the line. There's a point where that bottoms out, and I want to know when that plateaus. So if we can talk about that at a future meeting. Jerry, you had a question.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to follow up on Will's comment regarding the historic vehicle fleets. Muni has in-house a staff of specialists, and if you want to call it that, whose only job is to rebuild cable cars or fabricate parts for the historic streetcars, and they are as funded through the 5307 program. So,
right.
Thank you. Are there any more questions from the committee? Thank you. Will, did you have another? No? Okay. Lita.
I'd like to go back to the second to the last slide and discuss the federal funding. And you mentioned that there was a variance between the House and the Senate.
That's correct.
Can you speak to us about that? That 1% variance could really create a lot of competition for apportionment, especially in Marin County, where long-term planning doesn't include the replacement for the smart cars.
Right. So in order to get an increase in funding, we need Congress to pass a reauthorization, a new bill that replaces MAP 21. And the Senate has started working on a plan to do that. They have not yet put out the transit portion of that. They put out the highway portion of their authorization bill. And they did say that for the entire federal transportation program, their plan was to just fund inflation increases, which were about 1.6 to 1.7% per year, or so kind of minimal increases. On the House side, they have not yet introduced any reauthorization bill. However, they have working through the committee process an appropriations bill. It's kind of a two-step process. You need the authorization bill, which kind of sets the maximum funding levels for each program, and then and that usually covers between 2 and 6 years. And then each year you need an appropriations bill, which provides funding specifically to each of these FTA programs. So it's kind of, you need both. The House is working on their FY15 appropriations bill, and they're planning to just basically level fund all of the FTA formula programs. We would get exactly the what we got in FY14. And like I said, the only way they can actually increase the appropriations above the last year is by passing an authorization bill that authorizes the higher funding levels. And it's always difficult for Congress to pass an authorizations bill, especially in an election year. So MAP 21 expires at the end of September. Even though the Senate has started to work on the next bill, we would be surprised if both the House and Senate were able to pass a bill and agree on it and have it signed before September. So the more likely scenario is that what they'll do is they'll just pass a short-term extension of MAP 21 until after the election. And if they do that, then they would not be able to increase the funding levels because they would be basically limited to the funding levels that were authorized by MAP 21. So under that scenario, we would expect to get 0% increase in FY15. And so it's kind of an open question, you know, how long will they extend MAP 21? If it's just for, you know, a few months, and so that then after the election they can come back and agree on a new authorization bill, that wouldn't be a real problem because we could still have the opportunity for increase in funding. But if they basically punt on the problem for a whole year, then we would kind of lose any opportunity for a funding increase in FY15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aside from the funding aspects of the reauthorization, what is MTC doing to assist in the reframing of the elements of the reauthorization, the actual programmatic elements?
Well, on the FTA side, I can't really speak to the highway side, but on the FTA side, we're basically happy with the program structure as it is. I mean, we thought MAP, the changes that MAP 21 made, which basically the kind of the themes of MAP 21 were, one was eliminating some of FTA's discretionary programs, you know, programs where FTA is selecting the projects rather than the regions and the planning organizations. So MAP 21 eliminated several FTA discretionary programs and replaced them with formula programs. We generally like formula programs better because we know how much money we're going to get through the formula programs, and we can select the projects to kind of fit our local priorities. So we're basically kind of happy with the program structure as it is under MAP 21, and we're not really advocating for any changes. I mean, there's some minor technical things about the administration of some of the programs that we're seeking to change, but the basic program structure in terms of like 5307 and 37, et cetera, that's working well.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no more questions, thank you very much. That was informative and at the same time frustrating. Because I don't know about anybody else in this room, I'm not counting on the people in Washington to get their act together between now and September. I'm just not counting on it. So we're going into item number 7, the staff liaison report. Ham?
Well, I have a couple of things in the report and then one other reminder that didn't get it into the report. I did mention the Clipper milestone, that we had reached a benchmark level for Clipper service. I just put that in there, and I also put in a few updates as to when we're projecting Clipper would be available on some of the smaller operators. For those of you that are tempted to ask me more questions, I would say that I'm happy to pass those questions along to Clipper staff that could actually answer them. So I'm happy to take those, but I'm not quite the person that can give you an update on Clipper. But I did want to give you as much as I knew in writing there. And then I also wanted to point out the opportunity to drive an electric vehicle, which I'm kind of getting enamored of myself. I had an up-close look, and I'm very interested in these cars. So if you have any interest at all, there's some opportunities that are coming your way to test drive on some of these electric vehicle events that are happening around the region. So I'd encourage you to get out and do that. You don't have to be interested in buying one. Just go drive one and see how different it is. I think that'd be fascinating.
Do you need to reserve ahead of time to be able to drive?
I don't think so. I don't have that anywhere on the website in terms of these. I didn't see a reservation button. So if I'm wrong about that, I'll email you right away.
Pam, are these cars the ones I've heard about, the self-driven, the technology drives the cars?
No, I don't think we're there yet.
These are different then.
Yeah, they're all electric vehicles. The ones that I saw at the launch event for the campaign included all the general ones that are out there right now, the Ford and the Prius, the BMW and the Tesla was also there. The one I'm interested in is the,
The Leaf?
No. Well, the Leaf was there, but I've forgotten it. The Soul, the Kia. Kia Soul is now an EV, so that was just surprising to me. So, which is affordable. That's an affordable car. So, and then the last thing I emailed you yesterday, I think, on the high school internship program orientation that's happening next week, next Thursday. And this council is always invited to that kickoff of our summer high school internship program. For those of you who don't know, a former advisory committee, the Minority Citizens Advisory Committee, was really instrumental in getting this program going to introduce high school students to the transportation profession as a possibility for them. And we get an amazing crop of high school students that come to the table and do some really amazing, incredible work for public works agencies, for transit agencies, for MTC and BATA ourselves every summer. So you're always invited to that orientation. We would ask that you do RSVP for that so that our internship coordinator can make sure there's enough to go around for that next Thursday from 9 to 2. So that's all I have for that.
Thank you. And now we're at council member reports, locally relevant issues or events. And I want to preface this with Committee Member Winter, I understand congratulations are in order.
Yes, thank you very much. I was reelected or elected to the Belvedere City Council a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, I don't think I'll be able to serve on this committee anymore. And I just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed all of these meetings. It's been very informative.
Thank you, and you can move yourself on up into the commission seat somehow. Now that you've seen it from this end, are there any committee members with reports out? Seeing none. New business, Pam, before we have people asking us for new things to add to the agenda, why don't you tell us what our upcoming attractions are?
Well, I did just want to mention, since I heard several people talking about items that would relate to a legislative report, I tried to put that before you once or twice a year.
in the summer usually, but then also towards the end of the year when we're doing our legislative program, to put that under your nose. So July would have been the month that I had planned to do a legislative update, and we could have addressed some topics like Mike's comment about what about a sales tax, the speculation that you were discussing a moment ago about, you know, MAP 21 and the future and of the structure of the federal transportation bill. So I can invite Randy to come and give that presentation. I'm not sure it will fit on your July agenda, and so I'm just kind of checking to see if you're okay if we push that to September. Next month you'll be reviewing the draft TIP and the analysis that Naomi mentioned. You'll also be reviewing our draft Title VI report, and you'll also be reviewing the draft countywide transportation plan guidelines. So it's a full month next month, and I don't think that ledge item is going to fit. I'm hoping you're okay with it coming back to you in September.
I think as long as we know it's coming back soon. Rich?
It sort of tickled my memory when you talked about legislative, and I'd just like to mention one bill that fits in with our equity piece that we do. Ricardo Lara, senator from Los Angeles County, has a bill, Senate Bill 1159. We have approximately 3 million undocumented immigrants from all nations working in California. Our community colleges, our private business schools train them to be licensed for jobs in the state of California. And sadly, when they go to take the test, they have to have a Social Security number. In the industry, I'm president of the Board of Barbering and Cosmetology. We have about 600,000 licensees. I would say that there could be as many as 100,000, not only individuals, but people that own the establishment and the dirt under the establishment, who cannot be licensed in the state of California. Ricardo Lara has a bill that will allow them to use the new driver's license numbers. And I am strongly in support of that bill, because if for no other reason, if I were absolutely a person that were against everything that this stands for, public safety is the utmost problem. All of the material data, safety information, everything else that people are tested for to see their competency cannot go forward without being licensed. So it is a public safety issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other items for new business?
I had one.
Yes, Bob.
I could. At the last commission meeting in May, there was a lengthy discussion about allocation of PDA grant money or federal transportation money for an affordable housing nexus in Richmond. And as part of that discussion, it was consensus of mine, I think it was included in the motion on that item, that a policy discussion on the allocation of federal transportation dollars for those types of nexus studies, whether or not that was a policy that the commission should move forward with in the future. And I just thought it was interesting. I don't know what the timeline is for bringing that back to the full commission. I don't know how that lines up with this, but since it is a policy discussion, I thought that it might be something of interest to this group to provide some feedback and get some information on as well, obviously, you know, by the direction of the chair, vice chair, and also the commission itself. So.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I have something I'm not sure that I don't think it's not appropriate. I'm not sure that we can do it, but I'll tell you what it is, and you can give me your feedback. This concerns the North Bay, concerns SMART up in Marin, Sonoma County, and I realize I'm in Solano County, but when I was previous on the MTC, I was part of the Bay Area Rail Study back in 2008. And one of the things about the Bay Area Rail Study is the connectivity part of it that allows and mandates, at least in the MTC, that Caltrains, ACE Commuter, Amtrak, Capital Corridor are all able to connect and interchange equipment and interchange trains, so to speak. SMART is building a 70-mile transit line in Marin, Sonoma County on the Northwest Pacific Railroad, and they're building it with 48-inch high platforms and gauntlet tracks, which are completely incompatible with anything that is now running in the Bay Area, which means that if Healdsburg wanted to have an Amtrak train, which they could do, if they wanted to have it come to a community ride celebration or Santa Rosa or Petaluma or Novato, that equipment could not come to the North Bay, which locks out everybody up there from using transit. In other words, SMART is building a transit system that might as well be building it in Hawaii. And SMART, while some of the engineering was going on prior to 2008, prior to the Bay Area Rail Plan, they still went ahead and they're essentially building a light rail system. And they've also just recently got $20 million from MTC, which goes against MTC policy and the fact that the Bay Area Rail Plan advocates and mandates connectivity. So something, somewhere, someplace, somebody either didn't look at the Bay Area Rail Plan or forgot about it, or just said, well, we'll give them $20 million because they asked for it. So you'll have to tell me if we can look into that or if it's something that we can do. If not, I'll let it die, but I'll let you make that judgment.
Okay, we'll decide whether it's an information or discussion item once we Pam delves into that. We do have one card from the public regarding new items.
Just one comment. I recorded a lot of meetings lately, and one of the most interesting ones was a presentation about Urban Sim, and that might be appropriate for the committee to take a look at, because that is a new planning tool, and it was used for Plan Bay Area, and I think it'd be very informative if you looked at it. And then I did record the video of the issue with the Richmond funding, and I thought that was interesting, too. Thank you.
That's a good idea.
Thank you. Yeah. We did play with Urban Sim when we were doing One Bay Area. Seeing no more lights on for questions, I think we can adjourn. Thank you, folks. Have a great week.
Good job.
Woohoo! And we're out a few minutes early.
Better job.